Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Coming up on this special program today, a further look at Pope Benedict's annual address to diplomats accredited to the Holy See, with a focus on the Middle East and Africa. And as the new Secretary General of the United Nations, South Korean Ban Ki-moon, officially takes up his post, we take a look at the challenges facing Christians in the Korean Peninsula. Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Benedict is challenging the international community to work together to create a better, more peaceful tomorrow. Speaking in French in his annual address to diplomats accredited to the Holy See on Monday, the pontiff spoke on a variety of global concerns that governments and people of goodwill must confront. Catherine Smybert tells us more about what the Pope had to say.
In his speech to the diplomats, he said that in order to put an end to the crises and to the sufferings of people, a global approach is needed, one from which no one is excluded.
Un développement humain intégral pour aujourd'hui.
Among key issues raised was the lack of basic needs by people in our global community. The Pope focused his attention on the scandal of hunger, saying it's unacceptable in a world which has the resources, knowledge, and means to end it. He invited leaders of wealthy nations to take action and said he hoped there'd be no more delays in the process of debt cancellation. The Holy Father also spoke about disarmament, pointing out difficulties in negotiations over conventional weapons and weapons of mass destruction, and how security issues are being aggravated by terrorism.
Les questions de sécurité aggravées par le terrorisme.
Reflecting on various conflicts around the globe, Pope Benedict stressed how the Holy See will never tire of reiterating that armed solutions achieve nothing.
Vulnerabilité.
Turning to Africa, the Pope called for negotiations to end fighting in Somalia and Darfur. He remembered child soldiers in Uganda and the need for reconciliation in Rwanda. Addressing the group of 175 diplomats gathered in the Vatican Sala Regia, the Pope said he was looking forward to his apostolic journey to Brazil later this year, but warned against the danger of dictatorial methods in the whole of Latin America and the Caribbean. He urged nations to open up to Cuba and more efforts to restore security in Colombia. The Christian communities in Asia and their right to worship was another focal point of Pope Benedict's speech. Then, recognizing the rapid expansion of certain countries in this continent, like China and India, he deplored the increasing violence in others, such as Sri Lanka and Afghanistan. The Pope also expressed his concern over nuclear programs in North Korea and Iran. This brought his attention then to the Middle East. The Holy Father acknowledged some signs of hope in efforts to resolve conflicts in this region, but he also renewed his appeal to all parties involved in what he described as the complex political chessboard of the region.
En dictature du relativisme.
Pope Benedict XVI concluded his geopolitical overview with Europe, underlining what he called the undeniable Christian heritage of the continent.
Je forme des vœux pour que l'intérêt de la communauté internationale.
Touching on other international concerns, the Pope said that when it comes to migration, it's an illusion to think this movement of persons can be blocked or merely checked by force. He went on to highlight the mounting threats to the family based on marriage between a man and a woman. He referred also to other forms of attacks on human life, sometimes committed, he said, in the name of research, such as cloning. The awareness and discussion of these issues are not enough, said the Pope, unless they're transformed into concrete action. It's here that the Holy Father recognises the increasing efforts to promote human rights and dignity around the world, especially through the work of the United Nations, a body keenly interested in what the Holy See has to say, according to Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, the permanent observer of the Holy See, to the United Nations office in Geneva.
When the Holy See speaks, even though people are not in agreement, the different ambassadors, the different delegations listens very carefully. And they want to know exactly what the position of the Holy See is on a variety of concerns.
Finally, the Pope said it's by respecting the human person that peace can be promoted, and it's by building peace that the foundations of an authentic, integral humanism are laid. I'm Catherine Smybert.
Focusing on the conflicts destabilizing the Middle East, Pope Benedict said armed solutions, like the recent war in Lebanon, achieve nothing. I spoke to Lebanon's ambassador to the Holy See, Naji Abiasi, who called the Pope's speech comprehensive and important, that emphasizes the root causes of conflict and the common principles that must be respected to resolve them.
Concerning Lebanon, obvious, this is a clear position that the Holy See has always taken, that resorting to force will solve nothing, that only solution can come through dialogue. And he added something important to us, is that problems should exclude no one, no party should be excluded, that the solutions should come through dialogue, and that in the Middle East, because he referred to the Middle East as a whole, the solution should be global and should not be partial or unilateral. The new element in the speech of the Pope this year, that he did refer to the Christians who live in the Middle East, saying that he feels that they should stay there and contribute in promotion of peace. And I think this is a new note in his message, especially that he has sent a message on Christmas to the Christians who live in the Middle East. Most importantly, he spoke in a very positive way, and he wanted, rather than putting the emphasis on negative elements, but rather on hope. And he saw elements of hope in the area.
Pope Benedict said the future of Lebanon depends on the unity of all the Lebanese and, of course, the fraternal relations between the country's different religious and social groups. Do you think the Lebanese are listening to what the Pope has to say? Will they even be aware of this meeting of the popes with the diplomatic corps to the Holy See?
Definitely. The Holy See has always supported Lebanon for centuries. Lebanese government and the Lebanese people, through direct appeals, mediation efforts, dispatching of emissaries, of special envoys. His message is very important, and I'm sure that his message will be taken into consideration. Of course, this needs a follow-up by ourselves, the Nuncio in Lebanon, the parishes, and through diplomacy.
Lebanon's ambassador to the Holy See, Naji Abiasi. Well, Pope Benedict also expressed hope that small steps towards peace in the Holy Land would continue towards a negotiated peace accord between Israelis and Palestinians. Similarly, Pope Benedict urged African leaders to bring an end to the conflicts ravaging their continent and pointed to the deterioration of events in the Horn of Africa region, where hostilities have resumed and have turned international. Pope called on all parties to disarm and begin peace negotiations. He recalled missionary sister Leonella Scorbati, who laid down her life in the service of the least fortunate, and urged that her example and witness inspire all those who truly seek the good of Somalia. Within hours of the Pope's speech in Rome, U.S. planes launched a series of airstrikes in southern Somalia against suspected al-Qaeda terrorists. The recent defeat of the Islamists by Ethiopian troops supporting Somalia's weak transitional government has thrown the country into further turmoil. Somalia's interim president has called for a speedy deployment of international peacekeepers in his country, torn by war for more than 15 years. Is peace possible? Well, Susie Hodges takes a look at the conflict for us.
Will Somalia slide back into anarchy in the current political vacuum caused by the defeat of the Islamists by Ethiopian troops and Somali government forces? The Islamists took control of the capital Mogadishu last June and during their six-month rule managed to rein in the activities of the warlords, who wielded power through a mixture of violence, extortion and intimidation. Somalia is one of the most lawless nations in the world and has been without a proper functioning central government for the past 15 years. So what are the chances of peace for this war-torn nation? To find out, I spoke first to Italian priest Father Carmine Curci, an expert on Somalia and editor of a magazine specializing in African affairs.
The war is not over. It's very difficult to have peace in Somalia. The Union Islamic Court will continue to fight in other ways. First of all, they receive in the last 4 or 5 weeks a lot of weapons from Saudi Arabia, from Eritrea. We have to also to understand that the traditional government has no armed force at its disposal. They receive a lot of help from Ethiopian forces. And the Ethiopian forces in Somalia are hated by Somali people. It means that will be very difficult that people will help Ethiopian forces to set up peace in Somalia.
Dr. Steve Kibble is another Somalia watcher who works for Progressio, the former Catholic Institute for International Affairs in London. He too agrees that the transitional government faces an enormous uphill task in bringing peace and stability to Somalia.
I think it's based on the government solving two key problems. The one is to ensure that the militias who ran Mogadishu up till the Islamists drove them out last June, if they can solve the problem of the militias not coming back to extort and rob and generally destabilise the capital and other areas, that would be obviously a major step in creating security. And the other problem is what the transitional federal government does once the Ethiopians leave, because it's the Ethiopians who have basically destroyed the Islamist militia as a fighting force just at the moment, certainly.
Is there a risk, though, that the fighting won't end and that this could herald the start of an Iraqi-style insurgency against the transitional government by the Islamists?
I think it's undoubtedly true they will try and regroup. They have significant external backers. They have access to arms. Eritrea will always back them, elements in Saudi Arabia. Equally, the transitional federal government has access to its external backers. The Ethiopians, the United States, to some extent the Kenyans and the Yemenis, the Ugandans. So the recipe is there, I think, for a protracted guerrilla war. What the transitional federal government has to do is create the conditions for security in one of the most lawless areas of the world. I don't envy them their task.
After 15 years of anarchy, not surprisingly, the Somali people have few illusions about the ability of any government to bring peace. Father Carmine again.
People are tired of this kind of war, and also to see the international communities just doing nothing, and they feel very bad. They don't trust at all at the international community. They don't trust at all at the country around Somalia, and they don't trust at all at their own leaders. So it means they are waiting.
The population of Somalia is overwhelmingly Muslim, but Father Carmine says the Catholic Church and other Christian denominations are trusted and respected.
There are very few people, but they have the trust of the people, because the Christian community all the time, along the year, they work for the poor people in Somalia, in particular in the health and in the education. We are a small community there. I know from people from Somalia, they wanted that the Catholic Church in particular raise its voice in favor of the Somali people.
While Somalia's immediate political future hangs in the balance, the humanitarian plight of many of the nation's people remains desperate. Somalia has suffered from drought conditions for many years, but in a cruel irony has now been laid low by the worst flooding in 50 years. The flood waters have left more than 500,000 people homeless, and this in a country where hundreds of thousands of people already depend on food aid to survive. Kibble again.
The problem was that of a drought followed by flooding. It often seems so unfair, doesn't it, that happens. Their situation is dire, and that they are warning of a lot of people dying if aid can't reach them. And of course, the situation doesn't make that particularly easy with the fighting, having been on a South Somalia Kenya border, and it's the southern Somali areas that have been affected. So their situation is very desperate. But the agencies are at least attempting to restart aid in the areas where they haven't been able to get in because of fighting.
That was Steve Kibble, a Somali expert based in London. And you also heard the voice of Father Carmine Curci, an Italian priest. And I'm Susie Hodges.
Well, my colleague Charles Collins spoke to Nigeria's ambassador to the Holy See, Kingsley Sunni Ebenyi, about the Pope's remarks on Africa and how positive efforts towards Muslim-Christian dialogue in Nigeria may offer an example to countries elsewhere in the region. Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa, though relations between the two large religious communities have sometimes been strained over the years.
We have been coexisting with our Muslim brothers, and it's because of dialogue, like in politics, you know, we share votes. You don't, you know, really a religious leader will come, a Muslim leader will come. Like, for example, we have a president that is a Christian, and then the vice president is a Muslim. And it has always been like that. Very soon, Nigeria will have the election in March and April. Some of the parties are picking their presidential candidate based on, they will pick a Muslim and then a Christian will be running mate, or they pick a Christian and a Muslim will be running mate. So that's dialogue and coexistence. Yeah.
Do you think that Nigeria has a lesson for other countries in the world who, for example, this clash of civilizations people talk about, is not going quite as well as it is in many parts of Nigeria? What would you tell them they could learn from Nigeria's experience?
Well, that everyone has a right to his own religion, a right of religion, and then coexistence. All of us come from one God. You can practice your religion, I practice my religion, and we have common thing together. All of us belong to one country, which is Nigeria. Those Muslims don't have another country to go. The Christians don't have another country to go apart from Nigeria. So all of us, by nature, by God's own wisdom, brought all of us in that country. So we must coexist, understand each other through dialogue, and respect each other's religion and culture.
Now, Nigeria also, as I mentioned, is the most populous nation in Africa. It's also a regional leader on the continent. Going back a little bit to some of these conflicts the Holy Father mentioned, is Nigeria playing a role diplomatically in trying to resolve many of these conflicts?
Sure. Yes, Nigeria is playing a diplomatic role through the African Union. If you remember, our president was the past African Union leader. That's the Union of Africa. Of course, he's playing a very major part, and we contribute troops, peacekeeping force in all these regions. Because all these regions where they have conflicts, Nigeria has their peacekeeping forces there. And there are times other countries will give humanitarian aid to the people displaced from the, as a result of the conflicts. We give humanitarian aid and financial aid too.
The Holy See is, you know, of course, the head of the Catholic Church in the world, but it's also a diplomatic force in the world. What role do you see the Holy See playing in, for example, the situations happening in Africa? What do you think the Holy See can do to help with these crises, even not just the conflicts, but also the food, the economic situations? What role do you see the Holy See playing?
The Vatican City, the Holy See, they play a role in education. They educate people from this country, continent, and they give aids too. They're playing a lot of roles, especially in Nigeria. We have so many Nigerian priests studying here under the scholarship of the Vatican. Some doing health care programs. They bring them here, teach them, and then go back to the Africa and then talk to the people. So they're playing a lot of role, you know, which we appreciate. Not only that, in the College of Cardinals, we have two cardinals, Cardinal Francis Arinze and Olubunmi Okojie. All African. So Nigeria and Vatican has always maintained a cordial bilateral relations, and that's why I'm here to listen to the Holy Father.
Nigeria's ambassador to the Holy See, Kingsley Sunni Ebenyi. In speaking about increasing efforts to promote human rights and dignity around the world, Pope Benedict highlighted the work of the new United Nations Human Rights Council established last year. He also offered his best wishes and encouragement to the UN's new Secretary General, South Korean Ban Ki-moon, who made his first official address to the UN Security Council in New York also on Monday. Ban Ki-moon took over his new post from the former Secretary General Kofi Annan, who left his office on December 31st. The new South Korean UN leader, a former trade and foreign minister, is a seasoned diplomat who served at the UN and in Washington. He has been actively involved in issues relating to inter-Korean relationships, especially in diplomatic efforts aimed to ending the international dispute over North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is a Christian coming from a region where Christians are a minority. For some background on the life and challenges facing Christians in that region, I spoke to Cardinal Nicholas Cheong Jin-suk of Seoul. He condemned what he called an invasive culture of death in South Korea and urged a culture of life replace it. Also the apostolic administrator of Pyongyang, North Korea, he has also spoken out courageously for the rights of Christians to practice their faith freely in the communist state.
The Korean church is, as far as I know, is one of the most dynamic church in Asia. After Philippines and Vietnam, the South Korean church is takes the third place in Asian church. It's almost 9% of the population are Catholics. So in spite of the Buddhist and Protestantist, they are bigger than us, but we still have much influence into Korean society. In that point, I was nominated second the cardinal, I think. And the Korean as a whole now is one of the developed country, and as far as the economic level also, and religious level also.
Now, you said that Catholics represent about 9% of the population in South Korea. What are the challenges facing that community today?
There is a materialism among the people. They are anti-life, some kind of anti-life. It's the culture of death.
The expression that Pope John Paul used to say.
For example, the abortion, very high rate, and no children. I think it's birth rate at the third least in the world. So we must try pro-life campaign. So I will do pro-life campaign that at the most. And that for the culture, I will try among the youth people, I will try that what is the Christian culture is this. I will show them.
Now, you are also apostolic administrator of North Korea, South Korea's neighbor. What challenges does that particular situation present to you as a cardinal? Mm. And are there any Catholics today, any Christians that you're aware of in North Korea?
At the point of 1945, there were 55,000 Catholics in North Korea. And almost 50 parishes there, and the many priests and the religious sisters. But the communist regime, they oppose the Catholics, not only Catholics, but also the Protestants. They hate all religious freedom. So at the present, there remain only 1,000 or 3,000 Catholics only. No priest, no religious sisters at all. They all disappeared in the year of 1949. So we try to get some religious freedom. So I will try to do my best to regain that religious freedom. So sometimes I ask to the communist regime, at least one priest will reside in the Pyongyang or any place, but they say it is not the time. So I wait now. But at the same time, I aid them for the humanitarian level.
I know that the church in South Korea is very active in providing humanitarian assistance to North Korea, and I would assume also other kinds of assistance in whatever way you're able to. How does the church try to support your brothers and sisters in the North?
It is very hard to access the North regime. Do not permit the personal contact, so we await. They allow only one case, family reunion, twice a year. Of 100 family, they reunion only. But there are 10 million people separated during the war.
Of course, the Korean Peninsula has an American presence in South Korea. And then across the border, of course, you have the threat of nuclear power, of nuclear weaponry. How does that make South Korea feel? Are people worried? Are they concerned?
The reason why the Korea is divided is Russia and America. Two powers, they decide the Korean Peninsula divided north and south. Nowadays, we say four powers. It's China, Japan, Russia, America, and two, North Korea and South Korea. So we take a six parties talk, but it's not easy. Four big powers are different. Some kinds of, they think their interest is some kind of people. So it is not easy. So you mentioned now that the United States Army, but I must think also the Chinese power. It's a big. Yeah? And the Russian power. Yeah? And the Japanese also. So I pray always that our Heavenly Father, who can help, who only can help. So I do my best prayer every day, unless the Korean situation is not solved. It's a big powers. They are the power game. So it is not easy. So I cannot say one word.
But people there are concerned.
Yes, yes, yes. I think it is most important to reconcile, and we must forgive each other. Is it during the war? Both sides, they did some unhuman actions. So we must ask pardon each other and forgive each other. It's very important, and this is the first to do in order to get the reconciliation.
But do you see that coming anytime soon between the two Koreas?
I believe that God will permit us to reconcile, and our loving God of providence, one day we can reconcile and we can meet as friends and we can smile each other.
And my thanks there to Cardinal Nicholas Chung Jin Suk of Seoul, South Korea. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.